Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am, appropriately enough, your host, Michael Cutler. It is January, and it is the 27th day of the month, and it's amazing what a week can do. I welcome all of you to the program. Happy to play that game of catch up with you at the end of the week. It's certainly been an exciting and eventful week. But first of all, for those of you familiar with me, you know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. And ever since the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001, I've been a man on a mission. And my mission has been to wake up our fellow Americans, our political leaders, as many people as I can, to the true significance of America's borders and America's immigration laws. And it's really an honor and a pleasure to join you. Again, if you're familiar with me, you know I have a website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also write for a number of terrific organizations. For years, I've been affiliated with Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org. And in fact, just 2 days ago, they posted my latest commentary. In that commentary, Trump's planned wall is essential to protect America and Americans. Interesting timing. I wrote that commentary in advance of the president's executive order, but he released the executive order on the day that CAPS published my article, so I was kind of a little bit ahead of the curve there. But very important issue, and I hope you go to CAPS Web, read my article, read the other articles that are available. I also write for Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com, sponsored by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. And a day earlier, I wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, Trump-hating protesters, deceit and willful blindness, unveiling the left's lies about immigration, drugs, and terrorism. Finally, I write for another organization, The Social Contract. And this month, I took a hard look, or this quarter, actually, it's a quarterly, I took a hard look at the lunacy of sanctuary college campuses. You can't make this stuff up. You know, last week, President Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States of America, was sworn into office. And it's hard keeping up with this guy, I have to tell you. On a couple of other programs today, I've been making the point that Donald Trump owns golf courses all over the world, and yet he's yet to go to a single golf course. President Obama, in stark contrast, seemed to live on golf courses. And for all the talk we've heard about how Donald Trump, 70 years old, he's an old guy, he has more enthusiasm, more vigor, more get up and go than men half his age. And it has been an amazing week to watch this guy do what he does, and that's to put his horsepower, if you will, to work to create and bring life to the visions that he has. And, when you think about it, this is a guy who took an inheritance from his father, and rather than blow it, which we've seen people do, he harnessed it to build a worldwide empire. And he's using that kind of forward thinking, that kind of indomitable spirit, and he's brought it to the White House. And so he's already issued executive orders. He's looking now to build the wall. That was one of his very first campaign promises. That's going forward. He's announced that he wants to hire 5,000 more Border Patrol agents. That's a good thing to do. But something that the press hasn't been talking much about, he's also, as one of his executive orders, and I hope the Congress gives him the money he needs, wants to triple the number of Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents, ICE agents. We're at about 5,000 now. He wants to hire 10,000 more agents. And there's so much work they need to do, and we'll try to touch on some of that today. But again, we've never seen that level of staffing for interior enforcement of the immigration laws. And if you're familiar with me, familiar with what I've been saying when I've gone before congressional hearings or on radio or television programs, and what I've been writing about is the abject lack of interior enforcement of the immigration laws, which is really, in my judgment, the most critical issue of all. The idea that we're simply going to create a Maginot line on the Mexican border and that that's going to solve the problem doesn't work. It shouldn't be expected by itself to work. Do we need that wall? Yeah, we do. And in fact, here's the real irony. On January 20th, this is what I've written about for both CapsWeb.org and Front Page Magazine. There's a bit of irony here. On January 20th, 2017, the same day that the president was inaugurated, in addition to all the protesters taking to the streets, holding posters in many cases with Hillary Clinton's defunct slogan, "Build bridges, not walls," the United States Justice Department announced the extradition of an individual by the name of El Chapo Guzman. El Chapo Guzman is arguably the most violent, most pernicious drug smuggler in history. Operating in Mexico, he was creating his own drugs, but also moving Colombian narcotics into the United States across the Mexican border. He was responsible, alleged to be responsible. Let's be clear, he has not yet been convicted, alleged to be responsible for the slaughter of thousands of people in Mexico. Law enforcement, members of the military, judges, didn't matter. This guy was on a killing rampage, according to the indictment, killing thousands, often beheading his victims or the henchmen working for him beheading the victims as a further intimidation tactic. He went after anybody who got in his way, whether it was law enforcement, whether it was competitors, it didn't matter. Get in this guy's way and you were dead, literally. And the indictment charges that he moved nearly 200,000 kilos cocaine into the United States, smuggled additionally heroin, methamphetamine, marijuana in record quantities into the United States. Violence came with those drugs, along with corruption. And so it's remarkable. While the Justice Department was talking about how this guy had been indicted and extradited to the United States, you have protesters running around screaming, "Build bridges, not walls." And you really have to wonder why it is that the mainstream media did not put these facts together. You have to wonder how the mainstream media could frankly lie about Trump's inaugural address. I was listening to a local station here where the reporter, so-called, maybe we could call him a rumor monger, interviewing some guy with a British accent. I don't remember the guy's name. I don't even want to know the guy's name. What he had to say was nonsense, chastising Trump for not delivering a unifying message. And if you listened to the inaugural address, it was very much a unifying message, essentially stating that if you have patriotism in your heart, then your heart has no room for bigotry. I'm not using the exact words, but that was the gist of it. And basically telling Americans that if we unite as Americans, no matter whether we're white, brown, black, whatever color, whatever religion, whatever, we are unstoppable. We could achieve greatness by being Americans, irrespective of those other factors. If that's not a unifying message, I don't know what is. He talked about putting America and Americans first and saying that what really bonds us together is the fact that we're Americans. That's not a unifying message. And these two guys acting as echo chambers for each other, complaining bitterly about how Trump has no idea about what needs to be done. Well, look at what he's done. In fact, just before beginning my program, the word just came out. Trump has signed yet another executive order calling for extreme vetting of refugees and to not admit people into the country who are likely to be radical Islamists. Goodness gracious, how long has it been since we felt confident that the occupant of the Oval Office stood shoulder to shoulder with Americans? And I got to tell you, and if I anger some of my Republican conservative friends, so be it. But, you know, I believe in speaking the truth. Neither political party for decades, in my judgment, has given a rat's tail about the average American. Neither party. All that we've listened to is garbage about what we need to do for America. But really, it was American corporations that they were doing things for, corporations that were firing Americans left, right, and center, bringing in foreign workers, poisoning the political well with massive campaign contributions to increase the number of H-1B visas, to get immigration authorities to look the other way so they could exploit foreign workers. Everything that both parties has been doing for decades has been detrimental to the average American worker. And we see the results. We see the results. 95 million working age Americans who've left the labor force. And what's remarkable was that today CNN issued a report saying that this last year saw the lowest economic growth of the United States since 2011. Now, of course, I'm sure that Trump's opponents are going to blame him for it. Well, he's president the whole week, and the economy isn't doing well. Now, these are the seeds that were sown by the Obama administration, bringing in more foreign workers, refusing to enforce the immigration laws, legalizing God knows how many hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens, giving them employment authorization. Everything that the Obama administration did was to hurt the average American worker, drive American families into poverty. We've never had a greater percentage of Americans living in poverty this side of the Great Depression. How can people be protesting? Why in the world would someone stand there with a sign saying, build bridges, not walls, even as preparations are underway to put El Chapo Guzman on trial for smuggling record quantities of narcotics across that very same border into the United States of America? What are they protesting? You know, I wrote in my Front Page magazine article that perhaps they should have amended their slogans, these nitwit protesters, and they should have been saying, build walls, build the bridges and tunnels, not walls, because lots of the drugs are moving into the United States through tunnels. And so if you're concerned about America and Americans, if you're concerned about crime, if you're concerned about America's youth, if you're concerned about violence, if you're concerned about the American economy, then that border needs to be made secure. And that's not about xenophobia. Illegal aliens don't just come here from Mexico. They come from all over the world. As an immigration agent, I had the opportunity to arrest quite a few people who came here from Europe, from Asia, from the Caribbean, from Canada, you name it. Human nature is human nature is human nature. You know, we all bleed red. I don't care what your skin color is. I don't care what language you speak. Within every ethnic group, within every religious group, within every nationality, you have the good, the bad, and the ugly. But America not only has the right, but has the obligation to protect its own citizens the way that parents protect their children first and foremost. And if you watch the news conference between President Obama and the Prime Minister of Great Britain today, that was again the message that the president hammered home, that he expects the Prime Minister to do what's best for the British citizens, and that he was going to do what's best for American citizens. When was the last time you heard a president of either party lay that message out so clearly and in such a focused way? Usually what we hear is a lot of words, a lot of nonsense, and as he would say, no action. All talk, no action. And that makes me laugh, because my own parents, may they rest in peace, used to use that expression. You know, talk is cheap. All talk, no action. All wind up, no pitch, as one of my friends used to say. Jack Shaw, who had been the Associate Commissioner for Enforcement, the guy that led Interior Enforcement for the old INS, used to talk about all wind up and no pitch. And so now we have a president that has literally hit the ground running, issuing executive orders that are consistent with his campaign contributions, with campaign promises, not campaign contributions, because he didn't need the campaign contributions. It's the politicians who've been taking the campaign contributions. I put both of those thoughts together improperly. The politicians who've been taking the campaign contributions who would never do what Donald Trump did. This is a guy who is independent of all of that. That is the beauty of having a president who's not beholden to those campaign contributions. He's the guy that comes into the Oval Office and says, I'm here to clean the mess out, to drain the swamp. And the way that he's draining the swamp is to act decisively and in a way that is consistent with what he had promised before the election. I can't remember the last time I've seen this, where a candidate for office runs for office, makes all these promises, and from day one starts to bring those promises to fruition. When was the last time we've seen this, folks? And I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, an independent, a liberal, a conservative, we're Americans. At the end of the day, we're Americans. At the end of the day, if we truly are concerned about America and Americans, we want to make certain that we keep out the drugs and the criminals and the terrorists, and we provide opportunities for our own citizens. You know, I wrote a couple of weeks ago, around the time of Martin Luther King's birthday, about how civil rights and immigration law enforcement go hand in glove. The notion that illegal aliens are entitled to civil rights is nuts. Illegal aliens are certainly entitled to due process. We don't want to put somebody on trial for a crime they didn't commit. And if you make it easier to convict an illegal alien versus an American citizen or a lawful immigrant, unscrupulous prosecutors looking to clear their caseload might hang a crime around the neck of an illegal alien. And some guy wrote in response to my article about this for Front Page, and it shows that some people are very short-sighted and don't get it. Well, they're illegal. Put them in jail and deport them. Folks, that's not what I'm saying. If you're going to prosecute someone, you want to prosecute people for the crimes they actually committed, not to say we're going to charge them with anything we can because they don't belong here anyway. There is no anyway here. Justice is justice is justice. And the other part of why you don't want to have a second-tier standard of justice for illegal aliens is because if you put someone in jail for a crime, law enforcement stops looking for the criminal because the system has met the demand of putting the bad guy in jail, except it's not the bad guy, and the real bad guy would still be out there. So certainly, due process, we need to provide that for everybody in the United States. Human rights, absolutely, not a question. But civil rights means you need to be a full participant within a society, and if you're here illegally, you shouldn't be here, so how in the world can anyone make the assertion that illegal aliens are entitled to civil rights? Furthermore, by taking from Americans, and often American minority members, opportunities for jobs, then you are undoing the hard-fought gains made by the civil rights movement to provide equal employment opportunities for American minorities, American blacks, American Latinos. How in the world are we then looking out for the civil rights of Americans? So, you know, as I say, here you have Donald Trump making it crystal clear. We're going to make certain that Americans get the jobs. We're going to make certain that we protect American lives. And I find it interesting that now that he's also talked about and issued an executive order to defund sanctuary cities, some mayors are starting to rethink whether or not they want to continue as being the mayors of sanctuary cities. And I got to tell you, and I'm going to probably write an article about it, this notion of calling cities that harbor and shield illegal aliens from detection, why in the world are we calling them sanctuaries? When you think about a sanctuary, you think about a place of peace, serenity, security, warmth. You know, you get the warm fuzzies. Oh, we think about a bird sanctuary. You know, we can hear the babbling brooks and the birds tweeting. That's what sanctuary sounds like. It could be a place of worship as a sanctuary. Cities that hide, harbor, shield, aid, abet, protect aliens who violate our borders and violate our laws are not sanctuaries. And by the way, not all illegal aliens are illegal for the same reason. You know, this nonsense of undocumented. It covers a multitude of sins. And I want to break it down for you because I want you to understand just how important this issue is, how significant Donald Trump's actions are, and why everyone should be on board, why it's nuts for people to be out there protesting. First of all, the notion of calling any foreign national an immigrant makes an honest conversation impossible. And I'm willing to bet that at least half the people that have taken to the streets holding up those signs about building bridges is of the mistaken notion that what Trump is talking about is deporting people with green cards who've committed no crimes. And I'm willing to bet there are people that really believe it. This is the kind of nonsense being spewed by the mainstream media. Trump is going after the immigrants. No, he's not. He's going after aliens who violate our laws. Our laws have nothing to do with race, nothing to do with religion, nothing to do with ethnicity. And I know I've said it before, but I'm going to say it again. So if you're new to the program, you will learn something. And if you've listened to me before, bear with me for being repetitive. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. Is a section within the immigration and nationality laws, the laws that govern the entry and presence of aliens in the United States, and it defines who is supposed to be kept out. It's aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Remember, Ellis Island was a quarantine station. Aliens who are severely mentally ill and are violent or sex offenders. It's criminals, you know, murderers, bank robbers, gun runners, drug traffickers, pimps, arsonists, you name it, the bad guys. Aliens who are war criminals, human rights violators, fugitives from justice, spies, and terrorists. And then we get to aliens who would likely become a public charge, or aliens who have no authority to work in the United States, and if they do work, they wind up either displacing American workers or driving down the wages of other workers, American workers, lawful immigrant workers who are similarly employed. That's it. It's not about race, not about religion, not about ethnicity. How in the world could anybody be upset with enforcing the laws that are designed to protect American lives and American jobs? Again, we keep coming back to the same issue. So that's why this is all so significant. Now, an alien who runs the border is illegally present in the United States because that alien he didn't enter undocumented. You know, whenever I hear that, the alien entered undocumented. Undocumented is not a verb. You can't enter undocumented. If you run the border, you enter without inspection. You enter without vetting. So you have President Trump saying we have to have extreme vetting, and you have millions of people here who weren't vetted at all. Our government doesn't even have a record of their entry. What could possibly go wrong? Why on earth would you want to have millions of people in your country who evaded the inspections process, and then you have mayors saying, oh, we have to protect these people. Protect them from what? There's a way to enter the United States, and that way, by law, is mandated to be through a port of entry. I did that inspections job for the first 4 years of my career. And the goal of the inspector is to keep out criminals and terrorists and aliens who would take the jobs of Americans. That's the purpose for that job. That's why there's an inspections process. That's why it's important for people to come through the front door. And that's what the wall is about. The wall is not about keeping people out of the United States. The wall is about keeping people from entering the United States without inspection to make certain that they go through the port of entry. That's the reason for the wall. It's not that we're not letting anybody in. It's that we're making certain that when people do come in, they are inspected. You know, think of how they set things up when you go to the auto show or the theater. There's ropes everywhere because they want you to be in a nice, neat line so you can show your ticket and be admitted. Well, here it's more than the formality of showing a ticket. Here it's an opportunity for an inspector to examine the documentation and at least briefly question the alien seeking entry. That's the purpose for the wall. Not to keep people out, but to keep people out who seek to evade the inspections process. What in the world is wrong about that? If you don't think it's important that these people be inspected, then fire the Border Patrol, fire the inspectors, and let's declare that we no longer have borders and see how long we can survive as a nation that way. The walls are not about keeping out the world. It's only to make certain that the inspectors have an opportunity to make a record of the entry of the alien and make certain that the alien is truly admissible. That's why the walls are going to be built. Not to keep out the world, but to enhance the ability to vet the people seeking entry into the United States. How could anyone demonstrate over that? This makes no sense. But you see, I'm willing to bet that if you question those people who are demonstrating, they don't know why they're demonstrating. They heard some nonsense, and now they've accepted it as being true. This is the equivalent of someone yelling fire in a crowded theater, so people get panicky, and they charge. And they charge to the streets, and they say, oh my God, he's building a wall, he's not going to let anybody in. That's not what Donald Trump is doing. That's not why the Border Patrol supports him. What Donald Trump is doing is making certain that we know who's coming into the country. And when you look at individuals like El Chapo, when you look at the threats being posed by terrorists, that vetting process has never been more important to the safety of America and Americans. Period. That wall basically is common sense. Now, I know the president of Mexico is very upset. It's an insult to Mexico. How dare Trump do this? And he blew off a meeting with our president. Americans should be livid. Americans should be furious at the president of Mexico. And here's why. Mexico built a wall to separate itself from Guatemala. If walls are so awful, why in the world did the Mexican government build a wall along its southern border? And by the way, Mexico did encourage massive numbers of their citizens to come to the United States. During the Bush administration, and I don't know if it's still going on, I'm going to try to do some research, but during the Bush administration, it was notorious. The Mexican government was providing health care, exams, and so forth, to make certain that their citizens were up for the trek north across our borders illegally. They were given what looked like comic books explaining to Mexican citizens how to evade the Border Patrol, and then they went high-tech and issued videotapes with the same training, if you will, how to avoid the Border Patrol, how to survive your trek into the United States. So when the president of Mexico screams about how unfair it is that we're putting up a wall, he's thinking about those 20-odd billion dollars of remittances being sent back to Mexico by Mexican workers being exploited in the United States by dirtbag employers who don't give a damn about the conditions under which those illegals work, which is why they hire them. Exploitation is not compassion. Slavery is not compassion. This is a form of indentured servitude. How many nitwits have you heard say things like, well, I got these guys doing my garden, And I only pay him $6 an hour, but for a Mexican, it's good money.
What does that mean?
I had a neighbor tell me that once. I hate to tell you what my answer was. It turned into a pretty heated argument. For a Mexican, it's good money. Are they less human? Are they less deserving of a reasonable paycheck? People hire illegal aliens specifically to exploit them because they know they're desperate, they know they're vulnerable, and they want them to be paid, or they want to pay them the least amount of money under the worst conditions you can imagine. So, again, when the president of Mexico screams bloody murder about Donald Trump, what he's really upset about is he sees a loss of money. And then Donald Trump said, let's tax the remittances. So I'll tell you a funny story about remittances. On 9/11, there was an immigration reform caucus in the House of Representatives that was chaired by Tom Tancredo from Colorado. And in fact, after 9/11, Tom reached out to me. I met with him in Washington with his staff just maybe 3 weeks after 9/11. I drove down to D.C. and we had this meeting. And he said to me, are you willing to testify before an immigration reform caucus hearing? I can't give you a subpoena. I can't protect you, but it's important that the United States Congress hears what you have to say. And I did testify. And the next day, I was told I was no longer an agent because of a leg injury I had. The truth will set you free. But Tom did many things. And one of the things that Tom Tancredo did was to recommend that money being wired out of the United States by foreign workers be taxed. What's wrong with that? You're exporting money, we're going to tax that money on the way out. Most countries do that. When I was an inspector at the airport way back in the 70s, the government of India would not allow their citizens to bring more than $108 with them. That number has always stuck in my head. I'm sure it wasn't an odd number. It was probably the exchange rate in terms of the Indian rupees at the time. But if you asked an Indian tourist how much money they had with them, which was one of the questions we asked to make certain that tourists had the financial wherewithal to not fall into hardship and not be able to sustain themselves without working illegally, they would always tell you they had $108 with them because the government of India restricted how much money they could take out of their own country. So Tancredo said, let's tax the remittances. There was a guy by the name of Charlie Fote who headed up the First Data Corporation that was headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. And when Charlie Fote heard this, he immediately moved his company, First Data Corp, from Atlanta to Colorado, Tancredo's hometown. And he started a political action committee because he was upset about the notion of taxing remittances. By the way, you may be interested to know that the First Data Corporation back then was the parent organization for Western Union, an outfit that makes all of its money just about, because telegrams don't exist anymore. They used to do telegrams. Those of you old enough remember that. Those of you young enough are scratching your head saying, what's a telegram? But Western Union's big industry is the movement of money around the world. They're a moving company. It's like Allied Van Lines, but for money. And when Charlie Fote, who headed up First Data Corp, the parent of Western Union, heard about this notion of taxing money, he immediately said, we got to get Tancredo bounced out of Congress. And he started a political action committee for just that purpose. That's what this is all about. The money remitters, whether it's Western Union, whether it's the banks, doesn't matter. They are moving companies, and they are thrilled when aliens come to America and move money out of America because they get a piece of the action. It doesn't matter if the money that's being moved was acquired because some surgeon came to America to save a child's life and did something incredibly wonderful, or if the money was earned by a prostitute working in a brothel, or if it was money that El Chapo generated through a drug sale. Money is money is money, and you move the money, and they get their piece of the action. That's why we're in this mess. Everybody is looking at an open border as a cash cow. The United States Chamber of Commerce absolutely hates our borders, wishes they could take it down. And I've heard it from their own mouths when I've testified opposite them at hearings, both in Washington and in places like Indiana, where I've been before that state senate as well. Borders are impediments to wealth. I was actually told that by a member of the United States Chamber of Commerce, arguably one of the worst organizations in the United States, one of the most anti-organizations in the United States next to the Communist Party. They hate American workers and the wages they earn and love the exploitation of people that can be had for lots less money. Increase those profit margins. Give us that money. That's all they're about. It's immoral. It's outrageous. And that's why the pressure has been on to increase the number of visa waiver countries. Lots of pressure being applied. And for years, the politicians have been answering the call because once they take that campaign contribution, they've been bought and paid for. Bought and paid for. Federal agents, civil servants, members of the military are not allowed to take gifts. Politicians, on the other hand, can certainly take campaign contributions. Donald Trump turns around and says, "I'm not taking that. And I'm not doing what they want. I'm not going to be the puppet to those people who don't give a damn about the average American worker." And look how short-sighted it's been. What kind of purchasing power do the 95 million working-age Americans who have left the labor force have? How much can they buy? How many cars can you buy when you're subsisting on food stamps and unemployment? Understand why the economy isn't taking off. You see, this is a narrow-minded, selfish perspective of getting a quick kill. We're going to get the big profits today. Who cares about tomorrow? But understand something, folks, and I think Donald Trump understands this. If we could stop the remittances, that money leaving the country stays in America and will help the economy. And if you look at the multiplier effect, every dollar that leaves effectively reduces our economy by $3. That's the idea about the multiplier effect. If we stop hiring foreign workers and start employing American workers, they are not going to be looking to send their money out of the country. They're going to look to spend it and invest it here inside the United States. What a wonderful thing that would be for the U.S. economy. And if you have Americans earning more money so that they no longer depend on food stamps and other safety net programs, that burden to the economy goes away. This economy could percolate overnight if we would stop bringing in foreign workers. I mean, think about that. Imagine if Americans who are unemployed right now got jobs and decent paying jobs. They'd go out, they'd go to the movies, they'd go on trips, they'd buy a new car, they'd buy a new television, maybe they'd buy a house. And as they do all that, that's the real economic stimulus package. And as they make those purchases, the industries from which they're making those purchases would start to increase productivity and profitability. It would be an upward spiral of success, which is the exact opposite of what we had under Obama, of what we had under George W. Bush. The globalists have wrecked the United States. It's cost American lives. It's cost our economy greatly. And it's got to stop. And I really wish that the people that were out there protesting and screaming and getting their panties in a twist would stop and think about it. No one is suggesting that we not have tourism. No one is suggesting that we not bring in highly skilled foreign workers when there are no Americans to do the jobs. But the number of foreign workers we truly need who are unique is tiny. And the open borders crowd would immediately say things like, "Well, had your way, Mr. Cutler. You wouldn't have admitted Albert Einstein." Right. How many Albert Einsteins have come here on H-1B visas? This is the kind of lunacy we hear. "Well, you would have admitted Elon Musk." Well, no, they did admit Elon Musk, and I'm glad we did. Certainly, the guy is amazing. You know, PayPal, SpaceX, Tesla cars. The guy is an innovator. He's an entrepreneur. He's a credit to America. And people like Elon Musk should be encouraged and enticed to come here. That's fine. But when you bring in hundreds of thousands of foreign workers and displace hundreds of thousands of American workers, Please don't tell me that you're operating in the best interests of America or Americans. And so I listen to the protesters, I look at the news coverage on television, and I have to tell you, it angers me beyond words. Angers me and saddens me perhaps the most is how many Americans have fallen for it. I think about that massacre in Jonestown, Guyana, which is how that expression, drinking the Kool-Aid, came about. People jumping off the cliff like lemmings because someone said something that they think is true and they don't have the brains, the smarts, whatever, to do their homework. Please understand what we're talking about. In order to protect itself, a nation has to be careful as to who it admits. Homeowners understand this principle. We have peepholes on our front doors. We have door locks. We have doorbells or door knockers, a signaling device. In some houses, you have closed-circuit TV, and it's all done for the same purpose. Before you open the door to a stranger, the person inside that house wants to make certain that the person trying to come in doesn't mean them any harm. Knock-knock jokes are universal around the world because it's understood that people don't just walk into your house. They knock on the door, you say who's there, and they tell you who's there, and then you decide whether or not you want to let them in. That's what immigration is supposed to do. And that's the reason for the wall. That wall isn't to keep out everybody. It's to be able to give our government the opportunity to make a determination as to whether or not individuals seeking entry into the United States should be admitted, whether or not they pose a threat. So this is the madness that we've been witnessing. And I have to tell you, one of the things that really blows my mind, there's been some statements made by some true lame brains out there, irresponsible, bigoted people. People who criticize Melania Trump because she speaks with an accent. This is a woman who's an entrepreneur in her own right and speaks multiple languages. But because she speaks with an accent, there was some nitwits out there criticizing her, criticizing their 10-year-old child. It's amazing. The open borders crowd would make fun of a woman who speaks with an accent. If you speak multiple languages, you will speak with an accent. I know because my mother spoke with an accent. She was born in Poland, came legally to the United States ahead of the Holocaust. My mother's mother, my grandmother, was killed in the Holocaust. I was named for her. But my mom came here as a 13-year-old girl, lived in a rooming house. And when she came, she spoke both Polish and Yiddish. Not a word of English. And she and many of her friends who similarly came to the United States spoke with an accent. Why on earth would people that profess want equality, you know, make fun of anybody who speaks with an accent? See, the hypocrisy that's running through the other side is mind-boggling, and nobody questions them. Nobody questions them. And when I listen to the mainstream media and I look at the way they portray the immigration issue, the way they've been portraying Donald Trump's efforts to get this out-of-control system finally under control, it angers me. Journalists have a responsibility. You know, if you look at the investigator's handbook, which I was handed when I became an immigration agent, I hate to tell you, it was in 1975, the first paragraph talks about how agents, investigators, are fact finders. Fact finders. Then investigations are based on fact, period. You either have articulable evidence or you don't. And that's why we were taught how to do a thorough investigation and how to put the pieces together, connect the dots, if you will, so that there's justice to what we do. And that's true for anybody in law enforcement. I don't care if you're a city cop, state police, FBI, DEA, ATF, or ICE. The process is about gathering the facts by questioning people, by serving subpoenas, by reviewing documents, by conducting surveillance and wiretaps and all those tools that we use as investigators. But it's to come up with objective facts. Journalists don't have the subpoena power, but they do a freedom of information methods and so forth, and they're also supposed to be fact finders, but they're playing fast and loose with the facts these days. And it's a disservice to their profession. It's a disservice to our Constitution and the First Amendment. It's a disservice to the American people. The American people need to know reality so they can make decisions when they go vote, so they can go about their lives in the proper way in this great democratic republic of ours. And you have journalists who fail abysmally. You have college campuses that have created safe spaces to cut out debate, our way or the highway. And you know, we call sanctuary cities sanctuaries, and I started mentioning this before. I would rather we call them magnets. Magnets, because those cities attract criminals, fugitives, potentially terrorists, gang members. They're not sanctuaries, they're magnets for the wrong kind of people. And if you're going to be honest about it, we should really be calling those cities magnet cities. Similarly, we've got to have honesty about what's going on college campuses. And full disclosure, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I can't tell you the last time I voted for a Democrat because I think the wheels came off their wagon. And I've never recommended that anybody vote a party line. I've always insisted that people vote for individuals. And by the way, isn't it remarkable that one of the criticisms of Donald Trump is that he's a populist? And when you look at this statement, we the people, isn't that about populism? Isn't it about the voice of the people being heard? And when Donald Trump says, I am your voice, that is populism. And that's what I thought our country was founded on, populism. But the idea that people refer to the Democrats as liberals is nonsense. They're not liberal. Ed Koch described himself, the old mayor of New York, and I thought Ed was a great mayor, although he had sanctuary policies, and in one case, it cost the life of a cop. I testified at that murder trial because of sanctuary policies. But he was a pretty good mayor, I thought. Damn good. And he said he was an old-time liberal. And when they asked him what that meant, he said, an old-time liberal levels the playing field, makes certain that everybody plays, and whoever wins, wins. And that's what I believe in. And if you look up what a liberal is, it's generally a person who's willing to at least listen to all viewpoints and then arrive at a sane and rational decision. If you have a safe space on college campuses, places that used to be bastions of debate and free thinking and teaching people critical thinking, that doesn't happen when you have safe spaces and you shout down people of differing viewpoints. Anybody who does that is not a liberal, they're totalitarian. Let's not allow these people to define themselves because they're lying about who they are and what their agenda is. Undoubtedly a totalitarian and not liberal. It's not appropriate to call people who shut down debate liberal. This isn't about demonstrating democracy or respect or anything else. And it's time that we stopped allowing our adversaries to define us. I have been pro-immigration enforcement ever since the day I was sworn in as an immigration agent and as an immigration inspector before that. When I learned the significance of immigration, I understood this was the way it has to be. It's not about being mean-spirited to keep people out. It's about protecting our own citizens first, whether it's for a job or threats to our lives and safety. So we've really and truly have to deal with the truth, with facts, and we need to confront those people who go out there and falsely malign us, make accusations that are totally false and bogus. And it's time that as Americans we stand up. Stand up to the accusations, stand up to these bullies, and send them packing. We send kids off to college campuses that have become sanctuaries. That means there's a potential that people on that campus are criminals. Because again, let's think of the way that somebody becomes an illegal alien. By running the border, they enter without inspection. By coming in with a visa and then violating the terms of their admission. the foreign student who fails to go to school, the tourist who gets a job that's illegal, that sort of thing. And the final way that you become an illegal alien, an alien subject to deportation or removal, is the alien who is lawfully admitted and then commits a felony and is convicted. And if you listen to the Open Borders crowd, including Janet Napolitano, the former head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, if you wonder why that place became a disaster under her, and frankly, it was designed as a failure, read the articles about what John Hostetler, who chaired the Immigration Subcommittee, had to say about it. But if you listen to Janet Napolitano talking about her campus, she's now the president of the University of California, her campus is now a sanctuary. It's a sanctuary where she's shielding foreign students and illegal aliens alike from detection by ICE. And in addition to defunding those schools, and I've written about this, what they really need to do, what Donald Trump needs to do, is to issue another executive order stating very simply that any school that would declare itself a sanctuary should lose the authority to issue the forms. It's the form I-20, to be specific, but whatever. We should lose the authority to issue that form that enables foreign students to get a visa to attend the school. If that school is a sanctuary and is shielding illegal aliens from detection, we certainly cannot trust that they will cooperate with immigration to notify immigration authorities when students fail to maintain status as students. It's very simple. So in addition to defunding, go after those student visas. And I really don't understand why we are teaching people from countries that have adversarial relationships with us how to be engineers and scientists, because what we're really doing is helping our adversaries build their military that's now confronting us. We're seeing that with China. You know, China and India send us more STEM students, science, technology, engineering, and math students, than any other countries in the world. And meanwhile, China is now building up its resources in the South China Sea and that artificial island. They've been confronting our military. They hack our computers. Why on earth are we training their engineers? By the way, Dianne Feinstein said something very similar on February the 24th, 1998, when there was a hearing held about the bombing at the World Trade Center in 1993. She questioned why we were training people so that they could learn to make weapons of mass destruction here in the United States. So this is common sense stuff. But you see, what I would love to see, and I hope Donald Trump does this, is to turn around and say no more foreign students will be allowed to enter the United States to attend sanctuary campuses. It's a meaningful step, again, sending that message. And if you're a parent and you have a child in school, or if you're going to one of those schools, why on earth would you want to be on a campus with potentially illegal aliens who became illegal through various means? It's not only people running the border to wash dishes and mow lawns. That's the image that the open borders immigration anarchists have created. Among the people who are here, quote unquote, undocumented, are those with quite a few documents, including outstanding arrest warrants. Why on earth would you want to be on a campus that attracts people from other countries who might be criminals, who might be terrorists, who might be gang members? It's not safe, and it's not smart. You know, it's really, as I said at the beginning of the program, a wonderful thing to be able to get together with you at the end of the week. I hope that this program, and I hope the articles that I write for CapsWeb.org, Front Page Magazine, The Social Contract, and all of those articles appear in my own website, by the way, michaelcutler.net, one word. I hope it's helpful to you. What I ask is if this program is helpful, if my articles are helpful, pass the information along to as many people as you can. Be part of what I call my bucket brigade of truth. Post it in the social media, send the emails, make a phone call, tell your friends about this. This is a nonprofit operation. You know, there's no commercials here. I'm doing this program and the other stuff that I do. This is a labor of love for America. Having lived through 9/11, having seen those ashes land on my home, having seen the look on my neighbors' faces, not knowing where their wives, their husbands, their children, their parents, their brothers, their sisters, their best friends were. Anybody who was in New York back then, I don't think any of us will ever be the same. I think we're all still suffering post-traumatic stress. And it's about setting things right. It's about making certain that we look out for each other as Americans and as human beings. The idea that we've had administration after administration ignore the needs of Americans, I got to tell you, it angered me beyond words. If you listen to my programs, I've never minced words. But I really wish that anybody who's angry with Donald Trump, and I'm not, you know, I don't work for Donald Trump. I'm telling you this as an American, just observing what I see with an open mind and open eyes. I really believe he's trying to do the right thing. And I really believe that if you stop and think about what we've been getting from both political parties for far too long, has created so many of the problems that we are now confronting. We needed a change, and we got that change. And I do believe that this change will be the change for better. First week behind him, you got to wonder what Donald Trump is going to do next. And unlike Barack Obama, I don't turn on the news with trepidation, but with optimism. Boy, it's been a long time since I've been able to do that. Anyway, folks, I thank you for joining me this evening, but please do get involved. Go after those sanctuary mayors, sanctuary school administrators. This is America. Freedom of speech is about the right for peaceable assemblage. It's part of the First Amendment. It's part of our birthright as Americans. Let's honor it. Let's practice it. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. I look forward to joining you again next week, right here again on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a great evening, everybody, and a good weekend coming up. See you next week.